You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This is Nick Wright. I'm just going to say it. I'm in a great mood today. We have a great show lined up. Super excited. Kevin Durant, he's ready to build a statue of himself. The Vikings are making a big change, but we're going to kick things off right away with one of the more surprising stories in the NFL this season. The Steelers fighting for their playoff lives, having lost their last three games. This is a team that has made the playoffs the last 4 years. In fact, since 2001, only the Patriots have made more playoff appearances than the Pittsburgh Steelers. So who's next up for the Steelers to face? Oh, the Patriots, with possibly no James Conner and a banged-up Big Ben. No worries, says head coach Mike Tomlin, but he does know the road ahead will take a lot of hard work.
One thing that we're not going to do is we're not going to hope and wish. We're not going to go through our processes in the manner in which we have and just hope that the outcome changes. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to do things dramatically different, but we're not going to sit on our hands. We're not going to hope. That's not what professionals do, particularly ones in the position that we're in. We're going to actively seek victory. We're going to actively seek the change necessary to change the outcome of a few plays, which will thus change the outcome of a game. That's life for us.
So you see, Mike Tomlin sounds a little frustrated, a little angry, a little wanting to get back on the field pretty quickly. What changes do you think this team needs to make if they are going to get back on track?
Well, they just haven't had any type of consistency. And the NFL, it's always hard to win. It's hard to do it over a long period of time. Let's just go to the 2 weeks before last year's Super Bowl. The final four teams were Minnesota Vikings, Philadelphia Eagles, Jacksonville Jaguars, and the New England Patriots, right? Let's look at those teams collectively. Outside of New England, which they've been their consistent self, they're 9-4, all right? Let's look at the other one, the world champs. Tremendous NFC championship game against the Vikings, tremendous Super Bowl, they're 6-7. Jacksonville Jaguars got conservative before halftime, had New England on the ropes, had them scared, had them nervous, really played a good game. Oh, they're a stellar right now, 4-9. All right, those Vikings, 6-6-1. We talk about them a lot. We saw them in primetime against Seattle. So it's hard to win in this league. It's hard to win year after year. And I just took those four teams as an example because you would think, man, Minnesota, they went out and got Kirk Cousins. Oh, they're just going to build on 13-win seasons. Philadelphia won the Super Bowl with their backup. Now, the backup's a backup, and now they got their franchise quarterback back in there.
And Jacksonville ran it all back. They brought everybody back.
Oh, and added another offensive lineman so they can play more powerful football.
Combined 16-22-1.
Yeah, that's not the way it is. Because teams will adjust to you. You can't expect your whole roster to have that same career type of year. Anytime when you go into the season and you franchise a player, he doesn't play, so you know you have less talent. He decides, okay, I'm going to sit out. Oh, okay, then halfway along the way, oh, I'm not going to play at all. So they didn't even have time to be able to make that adjustment because they thought at the minimum he would be there for at least half of the season or a quarter of the season. So now James Conner's hurt. So I'm not going to overreact, but you take out two of their running backs in this franchise, that will alter your season. If James Conner was healthy and they were struggling like this, then I would be a little more alarmed. I didn't think Pittsburgh just had that much more talent than everyone else, but they've been inconsistent. Ben gets nicked. If they win this game last week, if Ben don't get knocked out, they beat Oakland. Are we in an uproar? No, they got the showdown against the – no. They can write their season,
yep,
win their last three games, and they'll be straight. So they came into the season with less talent. Their margin of error was less than what they thought. They have struggled along the way. Defensively, totally inconsistent. Sometimes they get pressure on the quarterback. Sometimes they create turnovers. The biggest thing what they have to do against New England is New England since 2013, man, they score a lot of points against the Steelers, that being at home or when Pittsburgh's playing at home. So you got to be able to maintain long drives, keep Tom Brady off the field. I'm going to give you the same recipe I give all the rookie quarterbacks. Manage the game, because Tom Brady carves up this defense. He likes the looks that Pittsburgh give him. They make tremendous amount of big plays. And one thing I know about Belichick, every time they play Pittsburgh, they're ultra, ultra aggressive in throwing the ball and throwing it deep down the field.
We're going to get into the matchup. But, Nick, if there is a team that you say is about as consistent as any in the league besides the Patriots, you always say it is this Steelers team.
They are consistent over long samples, meaning they have made the playoffs. Like, Tomlin gets there. They make two Super Bowls in 4 years. They win one of them. Their two down years are 8 and 8 years. And then since then, they've made the playoffs every year.
I mean, they've only had three coaches in 50.
In 50 years. I mean, the last time they fired a coach, his name was Bill Austin, and the president was Lyndon B. Johnson. It was 1968. Wow. Like, three coaches since then. So over large samples, they are consistent. Now, what we have seen is they are a team, as we talked about after the Raider game, that over the last decade, they have almost as many losses as a double-digit road favorite as the rest of the AFC combined. Like, they do tend to play down to competition, but then escape with a win. It's almost what they did against Oakland, where they didn't play very well. They drive down the field, they score, but then they couldn't get the requisite stop. See, to your point about the running game, there's only two teams in the league this year that have had more games with less than 75 yards, pardon me, than Pittsburgh, the Falcons and the Cardinals. The Steelers, not surprisingly, in those games with less than 75 yards, are 1-5. Like, it is very hard to win in this league if you're not running the ball at least somewhat effectively, even in this passing revolution. Now, I think they're going to be able to score in this game against New England, because while New England has scored against them, New England this year on the road, everyone scored on them. Jacksonville put up 31. The Titans put up 34. The Bears put up 31 in the game New England was able to win. The question is, can this Steelers defense, which fell apart in the second half against the Chargers, which fell apart in the fourth quarter against the Raiders, can this Steelers defense get the requisite stops to stay in the football game against a Patriots team that's coming off a loss and understands that they're no longer just fighting with Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. The Texans are right there, and it doesn't matter to the Patriots who gets the one and the two seed. If they're not one of them, they're agnostic about, oh, it's the Steelers, it's the Texans. So it's a critical game for both teams, for the Steelers to stay in position to make the playoffs, and for the Patriots to stay in position to do what they've always done when they've made a Super Bowl, which is have a bye.
Well, the Patriots seem to have had the Steelers' number as of late. Big Ben was asked yesterday why they've struggled so much against New England. Here's what he had to say.
It's funny because we hear that a lot, right? Like, you guys haven't had a lot of success against Brady and Belichick. Well, who has? You know, not a lot of people have. That's why they won so many championships and they're, you know, pretty good. So it's one of those things. It's a new season, new teams. Last year really doesn't matter anymore. You know, we can sit here and say this play rules changed because of that play. That's, you know, those crazy things. But they won the game. So it's a new season, a new year. They're still, Tom's still the best of all time, and Belichick might be too. So, what an awesome challenge for us.
All right, so we touched on it. Let's dive in a little bit deeper. What is the key to the Steelers beating this Patriots team?
Well, at the most basic level, something they haven't been able to do in the last month of football, including their win against Jacksonville before this three-game slide, which is play anything close to a complete game. In the game against Denver, the turnovers in the red zone ruined them. They were bad on offense in that game, scoring 17 points. Against the Chargers, we talked about it. The defense collapsed in the second half, while after the offense played great in the first half.
half. And against the Raiders, I would argue they were shoddy in all phases. Maybe you'll give the offense a bit of a pass because they were on their third string running back and Big Ben missed the majority of the second half. But the defense was, when this team was 1-2-1, we were like, man, they haven't recovered from the Shazier injury yet. The defense isn't good. When they turned 1-2-1 into 7-2-1, the story was the defense turned things around.
Right.
It's now back to the first quarter of the season as far as how the defense has been, at least in the second halves of these last couple games.
A couple keys for Pittsburgh. Offensively, they got to be able to get their tight ends in matchups against their linebackers and or their safeties. New England safeties are very, very good. But Pittsburgh, that's the advantage I believe they have. Get a lot of yards after the catch, typically New England. They tackle well in space. From a defensive standpoint, they got to get back to, I want the same resolve that Mike Tomlin had in that press conference. I want to get after Tom Brady, T.J. Watt. All right? I want Mike Tomlin to come up with a very, very aggressive game plan because this is basically their season. I expect them to bounce back at home. Last home game, all right, they had a lead that they had never relinquished that lead of a lead of that margin in the history of the football team. So I expect Pittsburgh, coach in the press conference, typically the Pittsburgh Steelers, and this one of the great home field advantages now. I expect that crowd to be able to help that team out to try to get through this little slump that they're in now.
You mentioned the press conference. Every time Mike Tomlin speaks, I'm taking it back at what just almost power in his convictions he has. Like, you compare a Mike Tomlin press conference to what we've seen out of the other team in Pennsylvania this year, the Eagles and Doug Peterson's press conferences. If Mike Tomlin were to stop being an NFL coach, whether it's motivational speaker, Secretary of Defense, something where he just needs to get everyone's attention to one consistent goal. I mean, he's a guy you can believe in when he's talking to his team or the media.
Yeah, he's like that preacher, though. But we're having a building fund, and he's preaching about it, and we don't raise the funds. You know what ends up happening? We end up getting another preacher.
Okay.
All right? So you can only win so many of them press conferences. I'm a huge fan of Mike Tomlin, but it's time to put up and shut up with that. What they got in Pittsburgh with the talent they have, the franchise quarterback in Ben. That franchise has supported them long enough.
Yeah.
All right? I don't keep track of the press conference. I keep track of the wins on the field. And right now, your team should be a lot better than what they are.
These are two teams, both of them coming off a tough loss. Both of them really want this. And as you mentioned, both have a lot of resolve. These are two teams and two franchises that bounce back. Which team quickly do you trust more in this game?
Oh, New England. New England going to give it to them.
New England, even though they've struggled on the road this year, New England has had Pittsburgh's number. And this, I don't think either one, you might say the Steelers are already eliminated, but I don't think either team can get to the Super Bowl without winning this football game. Because if the Steelers don't win this football game, they might not even win their division. If the Patriots don't win this football game, it's hard to see them getting a bye. So I think if you lose this football game, your Super Bowl aspirations are basically out the window.
I don't know how the Pittsburgh team will react to Mike Tomlin, but I know New England's players, they're nervous this week. They're nervous for their job. They're paying attention to every single detail. Why? Because last week, they made their coach look bad.
Yeah.
Because their coach had to apologize after a game. And I just know the level of respect that they have for things like that. It's just, watch the desperation for which they play with.
All right, we'll have Coach Mangini out here in a little bit to talk much more about this game. Coming up, can the Minnesota Vikings turn it around after firing their offensive coordinator? That is next on First Things First.
Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. Robinhood is a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. Robinhood is simple and intuitive with a clear design that shows data presented in an easy-to-digest way. Here's why I recommend Robinhood. No commission fees. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, but Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees. Trade stocks and keep all of your profits. It's simple, easy to understand charts and market data. Place a trade in just four taps on your smartphone. Robinhood web platform also lets you view stock collections. Collections are like sectors, like entertainment, social media, curated categories like female CEOs, and analyst ratings of buy, hold, sell for every stock. You learn by doing it. Learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks and track favorite companies with personalized news feeds. Custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving our listeners a free stock, such as Apple, Ford, or Sprint, to help build your portfolio. Sign up at first.robinhood.com. That's first.robinhood.com.
Right, let's talk some Minnesota Vikings. We spent a good deal of yesterday's This Here show discussing the trials and tribulations of Minnesota's offense, questioning some of the decision-making by first-year offensive coordinator John DeFilippo. Vikings had the same concerns. Yesterday, they fired DeFilippo. With reason, the Vikings had only scored 17 combined points in their last two games. Minnesota trying to hold on to that sixth spot in the playoffs with Miami, Detroit, and Chicago left on the schedule. CeCe, what was your reaction to the news?
It's hard to be surprised when you know the disconnect. And it's just a lesson in life for people, young, old, intermediate people, you know, midlife, whatever.
intermediate.
Because, you know, some people don't like
Like midlife, exactly. Don't like middle-aged. We call it intermediate aged.
Bill Parcells, he says it one way. He says that, Chris, as a football player, if you ever want to get your coach's attention, just do exactly what he says. And do it with all the energy and might and in football intelligence that you can do it. People, America, if your boss asks you to do something, do it with all your might, all the intelligence, all the resources around you. Because simply in Minnesota, that's what it boils down to. Mike Zimmer wants to play football a certain way. The team is built a certain way. And he wants to be able to play. Even though they do play indoors, he wants to play a rugged style. He wants to have a top five defense. He wants to be able to have some playmakers on the outside. He preferred to be able to run the football. Yep. Now, the weakest unit they have on their team is their offensive line. This is a talented football team. They should have more wins than what they do, but it's for the style for which they play. You can't, regardless of who the quarterback is, you can't have a quarterback you're not going to support with a running game. And when the defense, which last year, number one in defense, this year, number 11, you move down 10 spots, let me tell you what kind of quarterback or what type of adjustment those offenses are going to have to make, because all those extra time you're on the field, all those time you're chasing points, you're not getting turnovers, you're not playing on a short field, that's not the way the Minnesota Vikings are built. So even though you do have Kirk Cousins, they didn't say when they signed him, they gave him the money, they didn't say they're going to back him up to pass 45 times a game. That's no recipe, because he's not supposed to be Aaron Rodgers. He's not supposed to be Drew Brees. He is an improvement from what they had, but they're just not managing his talent and that offense as far as Dalvin Cook, and the concentration should be on that offensive line, trying to be more physical, play action pass, because Thielen and Diggs, they have thrived with Kirk Cousins being there. So it's impossible for two receivers, young receivers, to thrive the way they have this season and the quarterback play not be good. It's the game planning and the lack of I'm going to attack them down the middle of the field, either the tight end or someone else, and getting the ball to the running backs between the tackles, having a consistent rush attack.
And to your point about listening to your boss, if you and I take a car trip together and you've driven it before and you know the way and you say, Nick, here's the way to go. And I say, no, I know a better way. I know a shortcut. That's fine. But if we get lost on the shortcut, you're going to be a hell of a lot more angry than if I went the way you said and we get lost. Like, and John DeFilippo tried to say, oh, I know what you're trying to do. I know what you think. I know a better way. And if you do that and you're wrong, that's how you get fired 13 games into your tenure as the offensive coordinator.
What was the better way? What did DeFilippo think was the better way?
Oh, pass is what he called sexy yesterday. Scoring points through the passing game, trying to be the 98 Vikings all over again.
Trying to make a splash.
Right.
Trying to make yourself more sexy for your interview and everything.
Well, that's
trying to listen to the talking heads and everything. Oh, he's the next bright young mind. Really? Well, what had he done till this point before we anointed him?
A lot of guys seem to ride the wave of the two games Case Keenum played, Nick Foles played in the NFC Championship. after getting the Super Bowl, as you were talking about earlier before the show. And I think Frank Reich probably got some credit for what Carson Wentz was turning into as well, as did DeFilippo. But really, it was about NFC Championship game, Super Bowl. Now everyone's getting promoted. But another, your point about listening to your boss, another lesson is when you get a job, you got to ask yourself, are you doing that job for that job or for your next job? Because if as soon as you get a job, you're thinking about how this job can position me to your next job, sometimes that next job don't come around. And that's, I'm not saying necessarily that's what happened with John DeFilippo, but that's what it felt like watching. It felt like John DeFilippo was trying to simultaneously win games for the Vikings while make himself look good for his next job, and he just got this job. And so maybe the right decision would have been, hey, my head coach would prefer me not run the ball a smaller percentage of time than the Minnesota Vikings ever have. Let me mix in a few more runs. We do have Dalvin Cook coming back from an injury. We do have a quarterback who's new to the system, who while has more talent than Case Keenum, there are also some weaknesses to his game that if we have the entirety of our offense be around Kirk Cousins' game, that might be a recipe to go 500.
A couple days ago, you made a really good point that the way the Chiefs and the Rams are playing shouldn't necessarily be considered the standard in the NFL, because that standard has gotten a lot of teams tripped up. It got the Cowboys tripped up. It seemingly got the Vikings tripped up. That not every team can subscribe to that recipe of just high offense, high octane, throw it, throw it, throw it. That some teams can be successful if they don't do that. And the Vikings seemingly fell into that.
There's not going to be a team that's going to be successful in the NFL this year. They've changed the rules. But let me tell you, it's gotten cold. That football is not meant to be played with in cold weather. Those offenses have slowed down to a halt. Watching the Chiefs game. Oh, 2 minutes left in the game. How many points they have?
17.
17. Watching the Rams. Oh, it was below freezing
they were
in Chicago?
Six.
Did they score a touchdown?
No.
Oh,
and
all
the
right.
Saints the week before.
Yeah. Now, the Vikings got perfect conditions 8 games. So you have to realize you have to be such a superior passing team if you're going to develop that style. But the home, but the away team has the same advantage. Because if you're going to play your game, you have to build the team around what the head coach wants and how you're going to play. They play in Green Bay every year and in Chicago. You can't beat those teams without a running game.
And the other part, you mentioned the Rams all bringing the Saints. Like, when the Saints were trying to play this type of football, nothing but passing, with a quarterback demonstrably better than Kirk Cousins, they're 7-9.
Yep.
Like, when Drew Brees' yardage numbers and pass attempts numbers are way down these last 2 years because why? They got a running game. And the best player on the Rams' offense, it's not Jared Goff or Brandon Cooks, it's their running back, Todd Gurley. What has made Chris concerned about the Chiefs is not the injury to Tyreek Hill, or it's that Kareem Hunt is no longer on the football
team. You're going to need a running game to be able to win. Yeah, it's nice to have all the rules. Yeah, this new NFL. Let me tell you, November, December, look at the numbers now. And that's based on weather. And also, these guys are paid millions of dollars to be able to slow these franchises down. And they're starting to get to the quarterback.
Yeah.
They're starting to figure that part out. And the points are way, way down than what we saw in September and October.
All right, let's take a break there. Coming up, how will history remember this Warriors dynasty? Kevin Durant has his own ideas. We'll talk some basketball. That's next. This is First Things First. Moving on, the Cowboys are the hottest team in the NFL right now, riding a 5-game win streak. Just a few weeks ago, though, not so hot. They were 3-5 with rumors swirling about firing their coach and making a quarterback change this offseason. Jerry Jones says this team is motivated by those early season struggles.
When you've had the downs or when you've had the type of season we have, it's almost like in life, growing up without any money or growing up in lesser circumstances. Once you've tasted that feeling, it makes you appreciate and makes you not want to go back there. And this team, fortunately, has had real challenges early this year. We have lived to tell about it.
CeCe, yesterday on this program, you said you echoed just about everything of late that Jerry Jones has said. Is that streak still alive?
Man, Jerry, that...
He's making it tough.
Jerry can tell a story, too.
Yeah.
And Jerry, if you know of his story, it's definitely a rags-to-riches type story. And those who have grown up with tougher beginnings he relates to, and, man, he has a bond. He understands that. So I could see why he would use an analogy like that.
He's one of the few NFL owners with that story, by the way. The trajectory that he had and the beginning that he had compared to his other 30 peers across the league.
All right, so how have the Cowboys grown since what happened in the early part of this season?
Well, I think it's important to let people know as far as the staffing. They had 7 new coaches this offseason. Now, Jason Witten leaving that locker room, Dez Bryant leaving that locker room. So they had culturally, they had tremendous amount of shifting going on. We didn't calculate that before the season. Jerry realized his wide receiving room, his big offseason move from a wide receiver was to get Allen Hurns from Jacksonville, who was injured, who he thought could be a number one. I thought he was going to be a number one there. I knew he wasn't a long-term solution to be able to solve your passing problem. So Jerry realized, I'm not going to punt on the season. I believe that we're good enough. And with that young defense, but all the changes they went through, offensive line not playing as well. So they've made the adjustments. He is right. They went through some growing pains. They are on the uptick. They are one of the hottest teams in the league, and they're getting better because their passing game is getting better. So those types of things do. They do fortify you as a locker room, and you do understand. Right now, I think in beating the Saints a few weeks ago, they saw their potential. So in saying that, man, when you grow up poor and you go away to college, you start realizing, man, there's nicer things in life. There's nicer places to live. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I believe these young players, it can be infectious. And I like how they responded after 2 big Thursday games, especially the second one against the Saints. They came back the next week and they were focused. Even though they didn't play great football, weren't making a lot of mistakes, weren't being careless, weren't getting a lot of penalties. So for me, them being focused and not letting that success get to their head, I like where the Cowboys are. And Jerry, I hate to say it again, I echo.
Yeah, but you Jerry, agree with him.
I'm buying it, Jerry. Right. You this got is, me.
It is not an overstatement, it's not a hyperbole to say the Cowboys right now are the best at everything that they've been at any point in the year. The offensive line, it's playing its best. Its young defense is not as young anymore. Jalen Smith, his first year healthy, he's now 13 games into that year. Leighton Vander Esch, you know, a really good player even right when he came into the league, but now he's 13 games into his NFL career. Zeke is running the most effectively he's run since his rookie season. And obviously, as of the fourth quarter and overtime of the Philly game, we're seeing Dak Prescott. It's very small sample size.
That is a very, very, very small
Of course,
small
but it's the most
size.
Recent. It's the most recent thing we've got. He played the best he has played, and the reason that, even though it's a tiny sample size, you might be able to draw something from it is, it wasn't a random occurrence. It was, the guy they traded a first-round pick for, Amari Cooper, he and Dak connected repeatedly to win that football game. I'll even go to the coaching staff. It's not just the new offensive line coach, the new receivers coach, Sanjay Lal. The guy who's been there, Jason Garrett, he learned from his mistakes early in the year. Too conservative in an overtime on a fourth down. Lost a game because of it.
Went for it.
Went uber-aggressive on a fourth down in overtime. I think won a game in part because of it. So the Cowboys right now are in all phases of the game playing the best they've played all season. Now, as Coach Mangini talked about, the key is, can you sustain that over the last fifth of the season before you get to the postseason, which is, of course, where it all is going to be determined how worthwhile it was.
I'll admit it. Nick was wrong. All right, moving on to the Golden State Warriors. Hasn't exactly been the start to the season that many anticipated for the defending champs, but Kevin Durant, not known for saying anything that could go viral, told Yahoo Sports something that could go viral. He said, I know for a fact that we'll all get our jerseys retired. We'll probably all get statues here in front of the Chase Center. We'll be Bay Area legends forever, meaning that people will recognize this team and this run forever in this area. I think that's going to happen. I think about 50 years from now, when they have our whole team on the Chase Center floor or wherever the arena is at that point, all the fans will be cheering for us and reminiscing on those days. All right, CeCe, let me start with you. How do you think history will remember the Golden State Warriors, the way Kevin Durant has it laid out?
I'm going to go to Nick as far as the history buff before I dive in because Man, I don't see a lot of NBA players walking around at 80, but.
Well, and I would caution everyone, not just the Warriors. Building statues of people that are living is always a risky maneuver.
Yep.
So the retiring of the jersey, agree on. The Lakers got a whole bunch of statues in front of their arena. It's turned out great for them thus far. I would hold off on this. You never want to have to take the statue down is my point. But listen, how will history remember this Warriors team? This is the greatest collection of talent in modern NBA history. You have Steph and KD, who are already two of the 25 best players in the history of basketball and not done yet, and climbing, and could crack that hollowed top 15, maybe even the top 10. You have Klay, who is a top three shooter in the history of the game, and I would argue a top three heat check guy that I've ever seen. Like, as far as his ability to catch fire and be unstoppable. To go along with, now we're on their fourth guy, Draymond Green, who is one of the best defenders of his era and one of the most versatile guys of his era. Only one team since Durant's gotten there has taken them to a game six. They've won every series in four or five. So history will, assuming this year goes the way we think it will, history will remember this run as dominant a stretch of time as any team has ever had, as dominant of as Shaq and Kobe's Lakers, as dominant of what Jordan did in either three-peat, as dominant as what we saw from Russell's Celtics. They obviously did it over a longer period of time. But in this stretch of time, we've never seen this much talent and this much winning done. That's, to me, how history will remember this Warriors.
You said assuming this year goes as we assume, assume it will. Do you think this year is going to go the way we thought it would at the beginning of the season?
I just think it's kind of puzzling to me why Kevin Durant would be talking about three-peating, why he would be talking about after the season, and it's December. That to me is just kind of puzzling. And I was traveling around with Michael Jordan. I happen to be friends with Michael Jordan. Ron Harper is a dear friend of mine, grew up with him. I never heard MJ talking about stuff like this. I think it's the greatest collection of talent.
Yeah.
I don't think it's as good as the run that Jordan went on, because the only thing that interrupted that was his retirement. So it was longer, his three-peat on one end and then coming back and three-peating on the other end, to me, was the most dominant time that I've seen in the NBA in the modern era. This is special. They're special. I wish they could keep it going. But with Kevin Durant, he's put this on the board. I don't know why he's talking about it. That does not help his legacy, talking about his legacy before he accomplishes it. So I would like to see how it's played out. I would like to see them compete against someone in a 6-7 game series. So it's really, right now for me, I don't know what their future is. So it's hard to say how many does Steph win. Because the Warriors' history is not going to end with KD if he leaves and everything. So, to me, it's just idiotic to talk about where they are when Steph and Klay have said, man, we're staying here.
Well, and the other part of it is, if KD leaves after this year, what Steph/Klay and the Warriors do moving forward and what KD does moving forward? Because I said all those great things about this team, and they're all true. But the only but about this run is how it came together and the circumstances in which it was, which is Kevin Durant couldn't beat LeBron.
Right.
And then had a 3-1 lead on a team that theoretically could beat LeBron and lost it to him. And then that team had a 3-1 lead on LeBron, lost it to him, and then they came together. So for these guys, absent of the Warriors, but to cement their own individual legacies, what you would need to see is them get over that mountain separately, either Durant.
Yeah, I disagree with you as far as KD had to leave OKC because he couldn't beat LeBron.
No, he couldn't beat the Warriors.
Well, he couldn't beat LeBron.
He had lost to LeBron in OKC. They didn't get to play again after that. So I'm not saying we don't know if he could or couldn't is what I should have said. And they had played once and lost. And so my point is we haven't been able to see KD in a situation not with the Warriors, just like we haven't seen Steph and Klay in a situation without KD, aside from the first year when LeBron's second best player was Dellavedova, them go head-to-head.
Right.
So we potentially could see that next year in the playoffs. We could see all three of them go against each other in different rounds.
Well,
but
you don't think this is a response to everyone making noise and bothering him about whether he's going to leave or not, and he finally said, no, let me put out a statement. Let me make a quote about how I'm going to be here.
But he didn't say I'm going to be here.
He said, we're going to be on the floor. There are going to be statues of us here.
Yeah, but that's if they three-peat. He didn't say if we five-peat. Yeah,
oh,
said
just after this year.
He said when they're 80.
He said when we're, like.
They'll be on the court when they're 80, Jenna.
Yeah.
No. You know what I'm saying? I just assumed he meant he was going
to
stay with the
Warriors.
No, this
to me was, this was
oh,
not.
Oh, no.
That's how
it's
I
anything
watched
this whole
that.
Interview. He also said, he's like, there's not going to be statues of any of these beat writers. Like, yeah, we, guys, Katie.
That's so surprising
people,
that
people
he had a lot to say.
People know that. Not a lot of people are like, I'm going to cover basketball for a living. And one day. They're
going to
have a statue of me outside of Oracle.
Oh, coming up, he needs his own reality show. He is his own reality show. Can the Chargers upset the Chiefs without their top two running backs? It is a great Thursday night football game. We are going to preview it. That is next on First Things First. Welcome back to the show. Former head coach Eric Mangini is here. Coach, do you realize how often we make reference to or talk about you when you're not here? Do the ears burn? Do you go back? Obviously, you watch all 3 hours of the show every single day that you're not on the show.
I study the show when I'm not here.
You study it. I know. I know.
What are you pointing at, see?
Me.
I appreciate it.
My friend right here, Coach Mangini, pointed out. Yeah, I keep giving him credit.
It's good looking out.
Oh, dude over here is a thief.
Oh, that's not accurate.
I listened to his radio show, Coach Mangini. Mm-hmm. My goodness, you would be surprised at the what do they call it?
The word you're looking for is plagiarism, but that's a lie. I do not plagiarize anyone.
No, I wasn't looking for plagiarism.
Never
you
wouldn't, me on the show.
Coach. Right. Coach, I want you to surprise. Listen to Nick Wright on Sirius Radio. Mm-hmm. It's not plagiarism. Watch the lies that he's saying. It's his take and it's our stuff.
That's what the plagiarism.
Okay.
That's
it's not. It's lying.
It's not plagiarism.
It's taking someone else's information.
It's different when it's words. Plagiarism when you write it down.
No, you're thinking of libel.
That's when you.
And
that's what they got you at Syracuse.
He's not talking libel and slander. Thursday night football.
That's what you got kicked out. The broadcasting school.
Arguably,
you had to make that donation.
You're the one that got kicked out of school.
All right.
Take that.
It was for being good.
Thursday night. Here we go. The Chargers heading to Kansas City to take on the Chiefs. The veteran Philip Rivers looking to take down the young gun, Pat Mahomes, to keep the Chargers' hopes alive for the one seed. But they will likely have to do that without their top two running backs, Melvin Gordon and Austin Ekeler. All right, Coach. Nick needs more ideas to steal for his radio show.
Oh,
how do the
God.
Chargers beat the Chiefs?
They should have kicked
injuries?
You out, and then the world would have been saved from them.
We love Nick. We need more Nick in our lives, not less.
Look, one of the things I've liked that people have done against Patrick Mahomes, and I know Nick and I disagree on this, but it's bring the pressure. And I think the ability to bring pressure, but also bring it predominantly from his right side. So if you're going to lose contain, make sure that he's going to his left. But that consistent pressure, ideally pressure that keeps him within the pocket, that forces him to make even quicker decisions, not be able to extend plays. And then if you're going to play coverage, play split safety coverage, give up the run. And I don't mean dramatically give up the run, but concede more running plays than passing plays and double their two key guys and hit Kelce every time you can at the line of scrimmage. To me, that would be the approach. Force them to beat you running the ball or at least slow down the game where they have to run the ball.
So you and I were talking off the air about Pat Mahomes under pressure. And the point that I was making then and I'll make now is every quarterback is markedly worse when under pressure than not under pressure. So Mahomes this year is a 67 passer rating when pressured. That sounds awful. It's 18th in the NFL, so it's just below league average. He also has the second most pass yards in the NFL when pressured and the fifth most touchdown passes in the NFL when pressured. He still has the ability to make big plays. The problem is he's got 7 of his 11 interceptions that he's thrown all year have been when he's been pressured. So if you're going to get him to make a mistake, and that doesn't incorporate the strip sacks that I know we've talked about before, he is much more prone to make a mistake when pressured. But what those numbers also show you is if you bring the pressure and you don't get to him, you are leaving yourself susceptible to a big play down the field, as he's repeatedly done.
Right, but we know that if you just play coverage, he's gotten a ton of big plays down the field. At least by bringing the pressure, you're forcing the issue, and you've got the opportunity to create some turnovers. Now, you mix that in, ideally, with some disguise, so it looks like pressure, and you play coverage, and then double the two key guys, and make sure that every time Kelce releases, someone's hitting him. No clean releases. Hit him, hit him, hit him and hit him some more.
I'm going back to coach's game plan, the game plan New England adopted when the greatest show on turf. And in that game, we had never seen wide receivers, tight ends, running backs get jammed at the line of scrimmage the way that New England did in that game. I'm going to double that because not only Kelce, because we have one of them old-fashioned matchups. Kelce, I believe, best tight end in pro football. And Derwin James, man, he is going to be a star in this league for a long time. The rookie safety from Florida State that is leading that Chargers defense with that pass rush. Also, Tyreek Hill, he's got a foot problem. Now, he's a small guy, and he wears these little soccer cleats. And Kansas City, that surface is not the best surface. Might be rain on Thursday night. So anytime you have a small guy, because he's not going to wear the wider bottom cleats because they're heavier. And most little guys, they say that they don't like to play football in those cleats. So I want to watch him and watch his foot problem, but I'm going to jam him at the line of scrimmage. And if I'm able to do that, I don't think he's going to be able to make it through that game. Late in that game, Baltimore, they should have been jamming him at the line of scrimmage. When he was hobbling around, he hobbled around to be able to make that last play, to be able to get him in and ultimately get that touchdown to be able to tie up the game. So I have to be physical if I'm the Chargers. And Phillip Rivers, I'm putting this game in his hands. I might throw the ball 50 times. All right? He is a modern-day John Wayne, doesn't get the credit, but I believe he could dice up the secondary of the Chiefs. I believe that's the way for them to be able to win this football game.
Yeah, and with Phillip Rivers, the key thing for him is not to press it too much, not to make that key error, that key interception. He is fantastic, and he's been fantastic against Kansas City. And in the first game of the season, he had an unbelievable, what was it, fourth quarter. I think the numbers were pretty staggering. But just make sure that from his perspective, just by doing what he's done throughout the course of the season, that's going to be good enough. Don't press something. Don't force something.
And especially without the running game, I expect to throw a lot of short passes. But that's my number one way to try to be able to keep that Kansas City offense off the field is by putting the ball in their best players' hands.
You mentioned this earlier, but tell me why this time of year weather is such a factor. If you take the rain out of it, just the cold, how weather really fares into this.
Every football team I've ever been on, the coaches train us that you're going to have some bad weather. And inclement weather, that football, when it gets below freezing, Wilson, they make the best football in the world. But the surface of the ball changes. The ball becomes with a little gloss over it. It's hard to handle. You can't throw it as well. And, man, people are injured at the end of the season. It's hard to have continuity. People, they have a recipe for your best stuff. They know what you're great at, so they take that away from you. But football was meant to be played in the elements, and we have seen, yes, NFL highest scoring September, October ever. But since November, we have seen the best offenses. Let's go even with the Saints in perfect conditions in Dallas, struggle. Rams, Sunday night, struggle. Kansas City, last week, 17 points with 2 minutes to go. So I thought there would be a correction. Man, football is hard to play, and it's harder to play when it's cold. It's harder to play offensive football.
And one of the things about the best teams and the best players is they learn how to be comfortable being uncomfortable. And that's a hard thing to do, whether it's cold or playing through injuries or any of those different situations.
But isn't that
the great ones have a way to push through that?
Isn't that why that Baltimore game was so impressive? Your number one running back's been cut. Your number two running back is knocked out of the game. One of your best offensive linemen, Cameron Irving, he's out of the game. Sammy Watkins didn't play. Tyreek Hill is, like you said, limping around. They are playing the number one defense in football. Mahomes is struggling mightily in the third and into the fourth quarter, and they still found a way to win.
Their defense won that game. That was impressive.
Their defense won that game?
How'd they get the ball back?
Yeah, but they didn't even score when they got the ball back. Like, you're talking about the strip sack after they had tied it up? I didn't feel like the defense won the game because I understand the defense put them in position.
Absolutely. Their defense has been so bad. To say, man, they was going to only give up 20-something points, like...
But when you know you're playing a team that's never going to pass, as we talk leading...
They're 30th in defense, right?
Yeah, overall, absolutely. Oh, no. But I didn't think... I don't think...
Their offense didn't keep them in the game.
Okay,
said Patty Mahomes was playing awful.
What kept him
in the game?
Okay, so they scored 17 points in the first half, and then they didn't score at all until the end of the game. I don't think the Ravens, holding the Ravens to 24
points. That was the most surprising thing about me, their defense held up. and their defense made enough plays for them. That's how they, that's how, to me, they were able to get through that game.
Okay. All right. That's not that. I thought the defense played fine. I don't think holding the Ravens to 24 is a great accomplishment. I think it was, you know, they're going to run on you with Lamar Jackson. They ran successfully. They weren't able to make enough big plays. I, one last note on this. If the Chiefs have owned their division pre-Pat Mahomes, unlike any team in the NFL. Last 21 divisional games, they are 20-1. That was one of the things you liked about Alex Smith. We'll see if that trend continues on Thursday. If it does, they essentially lock up the one seed.
Quick last thought, Coach?
I'm excited to see what he does. I mean, this has serious playoff implications.
Right.
And this is another step in his development.
All right, that was quicker than either of these guys have ever. I wasn't prepared. I was like, I'm going to sit back and make something here. Coach, stick around. Coming up, can the Vikings turn it around after yesterday's coaching shakeup? That's next on First Things First. Back here with Coach Mangini. Look here, guys. We spent a good deal of yesterday's show discussing the trials and tribulations of Minnesota's offense. We questioned some of the decision-making by first-year offensive coordinator John DeFilippo. Maybe, just maybe, maybe the team was watching First Things First. Vikings had the same concerns, and yesterday they fired DeFilippo with reason. Vikings had only scored 17 combined points in their last two games. Now Minnesota trying to hold on to that sixth spot in the playoffs with Miami, Detroit, and Chicago left on the schedule. Coach, what was your reaction to this firing?
I really like Mike Zimmer, and I don't think that Mike does things in a rash way. And when you hear the things that he said in his interview where it's important for him to develop coaches, he hired a guy, it's important for him to help him, I really feel those were sincere comments and that it was a difficult decision for him to make. And I also understand the fact that he wanted to shake things up, and this is the time, this is the window that they had. Yeah, I'm not a big believer in firing coaches during the season. I've never thought that that's an effective way to go. But I do understand his thought process. If you ask your coordinator for something and you feel like you're not getting it, then things have to change. And I don't know if that's exactly what the case, but as you heard the comments over the last month or so, it felt that there was a disconnect between the two, and that disconnect had to be resolved, and he felt this is the best way to resolve
when it. When you say when you ask your coordinator for something, what you're talking about is if it was the case that he wanted them to be more dedicated to the run, not historically non-dedicated to the run, and he was just week after week not seeing that in the offensive game.
Yeah, you know, I had a situation with the coordinator one time where I said, I don't want to use the tight end in pass protection against this defensive end because it's a mismatch and tight ends aren't very good, especially in a three-point stance. And we did it the next game, and I brought the guy in and I said, look, maybe something I said wasn't clear, but let me explain this to you. If it happens again, it's going to be the last time. It's going to be the last time. And Bill told me a long time ago, look, if you are, you need to go home and be happy with your assistant coaches. And if they're not happy with you, tell them to go get their own head coaching job. And at the end of the day, the owner needs to be happy. And if you're not happy about that, go buy your own team. And that's the way it works. That's the way it works. So if he wanted something and didn't get it, and then explained it again and didn't get it, then it's time to find someone who's going to give it to you.
Did you, I'm not asking for specifics here, but in your time coaching either as an assistant, a coordinator, a head coach, or just observing the league, get the feeling that there are certain guys that as soon as they got a job were looking for the next job? And by that I mean like thinking about, how, okay, I'm trying to do this job, but I also want to see how this can position
showcase
me for the promotion or the next gig.
Yeah, and I'm not going to comment on this specific situation because I don't know, but yes, that's absolutely a situation where you're auditioning to be an offensive coordinator, and sometimes the trick plays are in vogue right now. The Philly special, the Santa Claus, the, you know, whatever. There's a million names for these plays. Yeah, one of my favorites. And so some of it is what's in vogue, what's going to get me noticed, what's going to get, this is the head coaching carousel time, what's going to get me on the radar screen. But that's inherently selfish. And you ask players all the time to put their own self-interest
aside
beneath the team's best interest. And the coaches should be out in front in doing that at all times.
Yeah, I was in Minnesota when Dennis Green, he fired the offensive coordinator, Jack Burns, fired him right on the spot. doing exactly what you talked about. Denny Green wanted to run the offense a certain way. Jack had a certain ideology that he wanted to change the offense and put his spin on it. Because a lot of these offenses, they say, oh, I'm a West Coast, and oh, I'm a play action, oh, I'm from Norv Turner, Ernie Zambezi. But every offense has the personality of the guy calling it. Defenses, too. You can be a 34, you can be a 43, you can be a nickel, dime, whatever. But the personality of that person will be on that offense. Brian Billick, he was appointed from tight end coach to being the coordinator. Now, Brian and I used to talk, and Brian taught me a lot of football. And Brian, he was ambitious at a young age, ultimately end up being a Super Bowl champion as a head coach in Baltimore. But Brian said, I ain't going to be no fool. I just watched a guy get shot by Dennis Green. I'm not going to try to, man, Chris, try to impress. Now, I do have some concepts and some things that I believe our personnel is better suited for. And he immediately changed that. But in establishing what the coach wanted, that was the number one thing. And then once Brian became high-flying, we started breaking records, then Brian started applying for jobs, but not in that order as far, because he had the talent, we had a great system, and he established himself what the coach wanted. And him and Dennis Green were in cahoots as far as resurrecting our offense, which ultimately led to us breaking all those records in Minnesota.
And if you look at the Hugh Jackson, Todd Haley thing, Hugh had every right to ask for what he wanted to ask for. That was his role. Now, if he wasn't in a position to get it, then that whole thing was set up for failure from the start. And you can have an honest conversation with someone coming in, and things can change. But as the head coach, you have the right to ask for what you want and get what you want. And if it doesn't work, it's not on the coordinator, it's on the head coach.
Are we going to know pretty quickly what DeFilippo wasn't doing right when we see the game plan this week when they play? Are we going to see a difference enough where we're going to say that's what they were trying to do, or that's what Zimmer wanted to do?
I would imagine it's going to skew one direction or the other. And as Chris said, when there was that change and someone, it was...
You err on the side of...
Yeah, you're going to give them... You want runs? Here they are, and here they are in bulk. And during the game, as a head coach, you may say, okay, pull it back a little bit and adjust it as you go. But, yeah, I'd imagine you'll get what Zimmer wanted.
This is my concern in Minnesota. And, Coach, I know you're a fan of continuity. In this league, it's very, very important. Vikings last 3 years, four different offensive coordinators. Norv Turner, a guy I respect. I met with Norv. He's now calling plays for Carolina Panthers. He's still in the league. He didn't quit coaching because he didn't want to coach. There was something going on there. So, yeah, I respect Zim. The Wilf family, they've invested. That's their head coach, and they're allowing him to pick. But they got to get that offensive side of the ball figured out. And also, I believe that his stress, he's been stressing about the offense, it's affected how the defense is playing. Last year, number one. This year, number 11. So whoever he turns it over to him, I hope he can just concentrate on the defense, because that's where Zim has made his mark in this league for a long time.
Here's the ironic thing is Pat Schumer, I think, ran the ball at the highest percentage of anybody last year, and he's the one that got the head coaching job. So it wasn't about the passing
game. Great point.
He did what Minnesota wants to do, who they want to be, and how did it work out? They had team success. He had personal success, and he moved on to a head coaching job.
And that also set up Case Keenum in the best position possible, where Case played way over his skis last year because he wasn't being asked to throw the ball like Cousins is two out of every three plays. It was one out of every two because they were running the ball nearly 48% of the time last year. So in that regard, now a lot of things went well for the Vikings last year, but in that regard, that worked well for Keenum got paid. Shurmur got a head coaching job. The team went 13-3. Everything went well in that regard.
No, yeah. The Vikings didn't. We didn't get no Super Bowl.
Okay, well, okay. Fair enough. It was a solid season despite that, but I understand
why am I
your
correcting
point.
You so much?
Yeah,
well, because you didn't need to. Everyone knew they didn't win a Super Bowl, see?
Everyone didn't get paid.
Can we not let Kirk Cousin off the hook either?
Oh, listen, I'm with you, Coach. That's what I got all this.
Fire curtain.
Next up for the Vikings, they host the Miami Dolphins. Coach, we'll see a little bit later on in the show. Coming up, how could the Clippers land not one, but two superstars this offseason? We'll give you the recipe next on First Things First. Moving on to two of the summer's most prized free agents, Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard. While some have them penciled in to join LeBron and the Lakers or head out to New York to try and save the Knicks, According to one report, the Clippers plan to land both Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard this offseason. Yes, I said the Clippers. All right, see, how realistic is that plan to sign both of these stars?
Well, I think that there's a reality in the basketball world that KD is going to leave Golden State. And there's always been a reality that Kawhi wanted to go to Los Angeles. People talked about it. We talked about it on this show. And that doesn't have to be with the Lakers. He's always said, doesn't matter. He'll go to either franchise. They have a lot of respect from Kawhi's camp in Doc Rivers. Let's go back to Doc Rivers. Before they gave Doc Rivers the title of general manager, basketball operation, super duper, all everything, the Wizard of Oz, what was his reputation as a coach?
It was an excellent
coach. Oh, definitely one of the top three in the NBA, always in the top five. But since that, and then that tricky trade when he acquired his son, ever since then, hadn't been good things been said about Doc Rivers.
And they, if people don't know, they recently removed all those other titles from him, gave it to Lawrence Frank. Now he can just focus on coaching. Usually there is a fight when that tries to happen. The Pistons owner tried to do that Stan Van Gundy. He didn't want to relinquish the power. He's out. Like that, I think same thing happened with Budenholzer in Atlanta. Didn't want to relinquish the power. He's out. Doc did relinquish the power. Now they're paying him an enormous sum of money. And that has worked very well for the Clippers, who do have two max salary spots open this summer thanks to Blake Griffin.
And one of the most surprised teams in the NBA this season, the Clippers are. So now when you talk around the NBA, Doc Rivers, what's his reputation? People think, man, he's great X's and O's. Man, gets his team ready. Guys want to be able to play for him. They play in the same arena as the Lakers. Mm-hmm. So I know from Kawhi and his camp, nothing has changed. As far as them, yes, Kawhi's having a great time there in Toronto. Yes, he has adjusted, but his thought process long-term has not changed.
We haven't talked about these two matching up. We talked about a lot of other players together. What would a Kawhi Leonard and a Kevin Durant team look like
together? Oh, I mean, you'd have, you know, I mean, people can parse about the order, the second and third best players in the world, the third and fifth best players in the world, whatever it is. It would become the best duo in the league unless LeBron got Anthony Davis to go along with him. Like, unless Giannis got to do some one of the Anthony Davis go along with him. There's not, Steph's not going anywhere. Like, it would be a dominant instant championship contender, probably the championship favorite. When you add Tobias Harris would still be there. You talked about the coaching. But Brian Windhorst did some really good reporting on this. The Clippers are pulling out all the stops here. Like, they are sending Lawrence Frank he's the president of basketball operations, to almost all the Raptors games. Like, that is not something NBA teams do. Team presidents are rarely at games. Their team's not playing. You send scouts, you send emissaries, if you will. Lawrence Frank has been essentially stalking, in a good way, Kawhi Leonard all year. I think it's very real Kawhi could go there. Durant going there would be utterly perplexing to me. To me, Durant's got two options. Stay in Golden State, where you can just keep winning titles, or go somewhere where you are the unquestioned alpha and see if you can win it that way. He wouldn't be the unquestioned best player with Kawhi Leonard.
But why do you have to do that?
Because why would you... Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I mean, I just haven't heard NBA players say, you know something? I want to be the alpha. Why does KD only have two things?
Well, and I'm not saying two cities. I'm not saying Golden State or New York. I'm saying Golden State or a place where he's the
only star.
Because why would you leave Golden State? To me, the only reason to leave Golden State is if you want to see if you can strike out and do it on your own. Adding Kawhi Leonard, who a lot of people think is the second best player in the world, would not be striking out and doing it on your own. It would be another
version
of
Golden State. Well,
no player
can go out and do it on your own. That's what LeBron, that's why they, in Cleveland, no
right,
one could do it on your own.
Correct. I don't mean with no other good players around you, but with a clear hierarchy. When LeBron went to Cleveland, we knew who the one was, we knew who the two was, we knew who the three was. In Golden State, we have questions about that. Don't you think there'd be questions about who the guy is?
I don't think this whole hierarchy, who's the best player, oh, is he number one? Oh, did he have to have some help? Every player needs some help. So I believe Kevin Durant's legacy will be enhanced wherever he goes. If he goes to the Clippers and Kawhi comes there and they have a parade, and LeBron don't have no parade, and KD got four championships, oh, I believe his whole overall history is enhanced a great deal. So for me, he has more than just two options as far as his career.
Is it enhanced more, C, than if he stays in Golden State and they keep having parades? That's my question.
Yes, it would be. Yes, because he has gone out. He has broken up. They got four All-Stars now. If he goes out with Kawhi and they're the team that would beat Golden State, if he's the guy that ends Golden State's history, absolutely.
I totally agree with that scenario, except if he's once again in a spot where we don't know if he's the best player.
You're the only person I hear talking about, oh, is this guy the best player on the team, when you're the only guy here talking about that. I don't believe that's all that important. When you start looking at how many rings does Steph have, how many rings does LeBron have, how many rings does KD going to get, I don't believe you should sit around and be like, oh, I got to be the best player. You need to be partnered with a good player. We're not going to – Steph, his career is not going to be like, ah, Steph wasn't the best player on that team. Oh, KD was the best player on that team. I don't think when we look at their history, we're going to break down, was Steph better, was KD better?
Okay, and that's we fervently disagree, and we talk to different people. When you say I'm the only person you hear talking about who was the best player on a title team, that is absolutely...
You're the only person saying KD's got to go somewhere where he is the best player.
I don't think KD has to leave. I'm saying you are in the best... He will never be in a better position to win championships than he is in Golden State. The only reason to me you would leave Golden State is if you hate the area, he obviously doesn't, or if you want to win a championship a different way. Going to another place where you have another top four guy with you, top five, whatever it is, that's not another way.
That's the only way you can win in the NBA.
No, it is. It absolutely.
Okay, where else is he going to win? Tell me where he's going to win. Tell me which team. Where is he going to win, and what's the player going to be partnered with him?
Anybody, the top five guy paired with a top 20 guy and a good supporting cast has been the recipe all of NBA history until KD and Steph got together. That's how the Warriors won. It's how the Cavs won. It's how the Heat won.
So where's the situation? Where is the team with this player and the situation? He's going to enhance his history.
The Knicks plus a guy. The Clippers. What? No, plus another free agency.
Oh, you need another Chris. You need someone, because Kristaps going to be there also.
Sure, absolutely. As your third. And then when they talked about Kyrie, the Clippers with someone that isn't one of those top five guys. Like, it's the same reason. You don't think you can go to the Lakers, right? You don't think you can go to the Lakers.
Because LeBron's there. If one of the other superstars was there, he could go there. Yes. It's just because LeBron and him and LeBron are walking down the same path in his eyes. That's the reason why he can't go to the Lakers.
Right, which is, if he's walking on the same path as LeBron, the only way to trump it is to... LeBron didn't go from...
Let me win with the Clippers in the same arena. When everyone's preparing for the Lakers to have a parade, let me have a parade with the Clippers. I think that would trump LeBron.
Totally agree. Unless people think it was Kawhi's team. Like, people think it's Steph's team.
I don't think Kawhi has the type of personality. If him and KD get on the team, people are going to be like, this is Kawhi's team. I don't think people are going to say that.
Okay.
All right, let's take a break, because we need to. Coming up, are Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan the two best players in league history?
One current NBA superstar. My boss tells me to do that. I'm doing exactly what my boss asked me to do.
Next on First Things First.
Rim going up and down on him right now when he's at the free throw line.
Unexpected energy of ExxonMobil. Kevin Durant was asked about who he thinks are the best players of all time. He said Michael Jordan and, wait for it, Kobe Bryant. Nick, what's your take on LeBron's take?
I don't even understand how, of course, Michael Jordan is in the discussion, if not at the top of the discussion, for the best two players of all time. And Kobe is not the best player of his own era. Like, you forget what he is compared to Kareem or Magic or LeBron. Like, Kobe versus Duncan is the debate, not Kobe versus everyone in league history other than Jordan. It's foolishness.
Let me try to explain Kevin Durant what he was talking about. When Kevin Durant, because he's basically talking about offensively, all right? So the centers, people like Shaq, Kareem, Olajuwon, all those guys, they're not even in his mind space as far as him talking about, because he's also talking about players he would try to duplicate. KD is an offensive player. He's always been an offensive player. So you know Jordan is his number one. Now, Kobe, for those who grew up watching Jordan, Kobe is a Jordan knockoff offensively. So watch his moves, watch his mannerisms, watch his uniform, watch his style. So KD in his mind, with Kobe being a mini Jordan in his mind space. So he's talking about offensive. So that's my interpretation for KD as a person who's grew up watching Jordan, loving Jordan, and having a deep appreciation for who Kobe Bryant is. That's KD. For the KD fans out there, that's for you guys.
For him.
Absolutely.
English to English. Moving on to the college football playoff, Oklahoma facing off against number one Alabama. Lincoln Riley says he's preparing for both quarterbacks, Tua Tagovailoa and Jalen Hurts. CeCe, how challenging is it to have to prepare for two, not just two quarterbacks, but both of these specific guys?
It's challenging if you're Notre Dame. It's challenging. Notre Dame was playing. Notre Dame don't have the athletes to be able to simulate and practice Jalen Hurts. So Oklahoma, they got plenty of athletes on their roster. They'll be able to assimilate what Jalen does. They got plenty of time to be able to watch the film. And Lincoln Riley, man, he saw Tua at all those award ceremonies when he's been traveling around with Kyler. So he knows he's hurt. So he knows he's going to at least face both of these quarterbacks. He knows that.
So let me ask you this real quick, because we were talking about this earlier. If let's say Tua plays one series and is out of the game, he gets hurt again. If Jalen Hurts has to play this football game, you still don't give Oklahoma much of a shot?
They got zero chance. They're going to knock him off the ball. Alabama is too fierce in the trenches. And Oklahoma's not going to be able to block their front four. They won't be able to run that offense.
Even without Tua, Alabama
500
washes.
Yards. How you want your meat cut? You want it sliced up, diced, passing it? Or you want me to grind it up like a meat grinder?
Wow.
How you want it?
Wow.
How you want your meat? That's what the way this semifinal going to be.
Awesome.
Bap, bap.
Hell of a take.
Bap, bap. Wow. Finally, the Texans had their
win
streak snapped by the Colts on Sunday.
I only steal your takes I agree with.
But the star wideout, DeAndre Hopkins, is still on pace for another great season. A big reason why? A full year of Deshaun Watson throwing him passes. Wasn't always the case, as former teammate of Hopkins, Andre Johnson, noted, saying some guys are fortunate to play with Hall of Fame caliber quarterbacks their whole career. Some guys aren't. CeCe, how much harder is a wide receiver's job with a subpar quarterback?
I mean, this whole game offensively in the NFL is surrounded by that guy. All the attention is on that guy, who the quarterback's going to be. And it's just like, it's like no other job that centers around talented people. But in the NFL, man, if you don't have a talented quarterback, it's almost impossible to win. And if you don't have a talented quarterback throwing to you, it's almost impossible to have a great career. So if you don't have a talented quarterback, you don't have a guy that has the ability to be able to read, be able to anticipate, what you have to do is you have to be the constant force in the passing game. That means you have to be an excellent route runner. You can't be a guy who freelances. So you have to be predictable in your movement. He has to be able to anticipate exactly what you're going to do. But ultimately, if you have a guy who's challenged as a quarterback, not only does your skill level route running, your ability to read coverages, man, you got to make some spectacular catches. Game after game after game, because they're not going to be on target. You're not going to be in sync with them. You're not going to. As Warren Moon used to tell me, Chris, on certain routes, Chris, I need this amount of space, bruh. If you give me this amount of space, especially inside, those inside breaking routes, if you play in the slot, and man, it's hard to play in the slot with, man, a guy who can't throw, a guy can't time it up. Man, it makes your job more difficult. So as a wide receiver, I don't believe in making excuses. You have to be the constant force. You have to be the professional. You have to bring the excellence to the passing game. You have to be predictable, because you're not going to have that from your quarterback.
You mentioned that all the things you're going to have to make as far as spectacular catches, you're going to have to get even more open because they can't fit it into the small windows. The other part that Andre didn't talk about, but I know to be the case, is you're also at risk a lot more. If you're playing with a bad quarterback, the risk of him leading you into trouble, right? The risk of him not speaking to you with the football like you talk about, of him laying you out over the middle to where you're trying to make a spectacular catch and you get crushed, is so much greater than when you're playing with one of these good to great quarterbacks that can speak to you.
Now, that's never an excuse. That's all a part of doing business. Running backs play with an inept offensive line. So you have, if you're involved in team sports, there's going to be some major compromise in the things that I've decided to do. I'm going to do what the team needs me to do. So you being brought into traffic, that's a job. That's part of your job and part of being good in this league. I tell people the difference between the good receivers and the great ones will go across that middle and make the money. The good ones stay on the perimeter, and that's the only part that they like to strive and be excellent at.
So just for some context, the quarterbacks that threw to Andre Johnson in his career, Schaub, Carr, Rosenfels, Keenum, Fitzpatrick, Yates, Banks, Mallett, Ragone, Delhomme, Savage, Leinart, Grossman. And that is the exact track, by the way, that Nuke was on for as well. Before Deshaun Watson, Osweiler, Hoyer, Schaub, Keenum, Savage, Fitzpatrick, Mallett, Yates, Whedon, Daniels, Heinicke.
Got the
And then they got Deshaun. And that is what was been to me so impressive about DeAndre Hopkins, because I was in Houston when they drafted him. I watched him play with those mediocre to bad long list of quarterbacks, is he was productive no matter who was throwing him the football. It wasn't just his spectacular catches. He was able to put up good numbers.
Right. The best guys that ever played this game have been consistent regardless if they have a quarterback. Now, if you have a great one or two great ones, it does make your job easier, but it's all a part. Man, you can't control where you're drafted. You can't control which team you're going to go to. You can't control if your franchise is going to get you a franchise quarterback.
But also, it takes time to get into some sort of chemistry, some sort of relationship with a quarterback, and for you to go through all those different quarterbacks and for DeAndre Hopkins still to be able to put up those numbers despite having to start over and over again with all different quarterbacks is so impressive.
I want to ask you one question before we move on, because you had, I'm not to disparage the quarterbacks you played with, there's only one great quarterback you ever played with. Mm-hmm. Warren Moon, first ballot Hall of Famer. Was it after playing with Warren Moon, was it more difficult to go back to what you had played with pre-Warren Moon?
Bad quarterbacks are difficult to play with if you had great experience or you had no experience at all. It make your job more difficult. They're no different than people you work with. If they're not talented, they can't do their job. More of that workload is put on to you. So I wouldn't say my job became harder. I knew more football after Warren Moon. So it allowed me to be able to deal with that was a part of what team I was on and part of the overall makeup. So it's not something that I ever like to discuss too much and use as some type of excuse. I made 8 Pro Bowl with 5 different quarterbacks. So I believe it's about getting the job done. Regardless of who they have there, you can get the job done. Larry Fitzgerald, he's got 1,200 catches. I don't hear him mention it not one time. It's never been an excuse for him. It's never been an excuse for the other receivers that have played this great game for as long as they've played it.
It's like if he goes and does another show, he's going to know.
Jenna, you,
no, I'm bringing us both into it. It's just going to be different. It's going to be going from wall to
You guys are a lot different than when I did the show with Bob Costas. A lot different.
Jenna, you keep saying that. It's just the wrong day for
no,
that.
It's the right
We're 326
day.
Shows in. One day you'll get the feel.
Yeah, Nick's a lot like Dan Marino.
Hold on a second.
Said nobody else.
Chris Collinsworth.
Time now for our newest segment.
Speaking of that.
Here we go.
This is your idea.
Nick makes a list. Here's the deal. Nick loves lists.
That was last week.
Isn't so sure, but he plays along. All right, Nick, what do you have for us today?
All right, since we were talking about Dwayne Wade yesterday, and I said he's the 4th greatest shooting guard ever, and people were all in my mentions arguing with me, here's your definitive list of the 7 greatest shooting guards in NBA history. Number 7, Allen Iverson, league MVP, a guy who led a bad team to the only win that any team got against the 2001 Lakers in the playoffs, and a 4-time scoring champ. Number 6, the forgotten and underrated Iceman, George Gervin. See, I know you grew up watching him. 4-time scoring champ, 7-time All-NBA over a 5-year span, averaged 30 points per game.
I saw George Gervin lately, man. He looked like he ate Allen Iverson. I'm putting Allen Iverson above George Gervin. But go ahead. Man, he's big.
Number 5, James Harden. He's a league MVP. He's a scoring champ. He's an assist champ, and he is arguably the best isolation scorer we've ever seen in the league. He needs more playoff success, but what he's done already puts him at number five. Number four, D. Wade, as I said yesterday, finals MVP. When they won that first title, down 0-2 against the Mavs, 39-8-4 in those four straight wins, eight-time All-NBA and a three-time champion. Now the real cream of the crop. Three guys who are top 10 all-time. Jerry West, number three, 9 NBA finals, 10-time first-team All-NBA, a finals MVP and average for his career, 27-6-7. One of the greatest players in league history and the logo for a reason. Number two, C, your guy Kobe Bryant, 2 finals MVPs, 5 championships, 1 league MVP, 15 times on an All-NBA team, first, second, or third team. And then Michael Jordan, 6-time champ and 6-time finals MVP, 10 All-NBA first teams, 5 regular season MVPs, and without question, the second greatest player of all time.
What about the defense? What about Michael Jordan? How many times was he first?
He was defensive player of the year once.
Okay.
First team all defense, I want to say 7 times.
Yeah, don't forget that part. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, try to be quicker.
But John Starks,
you didn't want to be quicker, you could have admitted the LeBron stuff.
What? I never said LeBron. When did I say anything about LeBron in this whole segment? Not once. Not one time.
When you said the second greatest player.
Oh, it was implied. It was implied. I didn't say nothing.
No implications are allowed. It's too timely. Mm-hmm.
6 championships.
Got to take a break. Coming up. Back to football. To the Steelers. They ever get the game set. Back on track. Yeah. First things first. Twin brothers defend their titles in a big night of championship fights on Fox. Fights on Fox, PBC, December 22nd, only on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
Once upon a time, long, long time ago, I trained with these two guys. These two guys are awesome. That was well before they were champions of the world. It's a great story. Should be great fights coming up
in
a couple
weeks. You trained with them?
Yeah, I trained twice. I threw up the second time, never came back, but it happened.
What happened the first time?
First time, I made it through.
You passed out, don't remember.
I got knocked out.
No, we didn't spar.
Oh, we know that. I'm just talking about the physical part. I know you didn't take a punch.
You trained with them?
Yeah, I trained with them. Jenna. Yes, I did. I threw up in the gym the second time. I never came back.
I used to train with Tyson.
Mm-hmm. As believable.
I don't lie.
Back here with Coach Mangini, who trained with Mike Tyson. The Pittsburgh Steelers are fighting for their playoff lives, having lost their last 3 games. This is a team that has made the playoffs the last 4 years. In fact, since 2001, only the Patriots have made more playoff appearances than the Steelers. Who's next up for the Steelers? The Patriots, with possibly no James Conner and a banged-up Big Ben. No worries, says Mike Tomlin, but he does know the road ahead will take a lot of hard work.
One thing that we're not going to do is we're not going to hope and wish. We're not going to go through our processes in the manner in which we have and just hope that the outcome changes. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to do things dramatically different, but we're not going to sit on our hands. We're not going to hope. That's not what professionals do, particularly ones in the position that we're in. We're going to actively seek victory. We're going to actively seek the change necessary to change the outcome of a few plays, which will thus change the outcome of a game. That's life for us.
All right, Coach, what changes does the Steelers team need to make if they want to try to get back on track?
Well, it doesn't have to be wholesale changes. Remember, this is a team that won 6 games in a row. Then they lose the fluky game to Denver. You know, the ball's knocked out on the 1 yard. There are a bunch of things in that game that could have been different. And you look at last week, their all-pro kicker misses a field goal late in the game, which would have tied it up. And even the San Diego game, they're up big. You know, they have some problems late in the game there. They're still in a position to win that game. So you want to make sure as you're making these changes, you're doing it in a very targeted way. You don't want to go through wholesale changes. And look, playing New England is tough at any point. And the idea of changing things up versus that offense is exactly the right thing to do. You don't want to give Tom and that group the same thing that you've been giving, the same thing that has worked against them in the past. And the one issue that they've had is dealing with things in the second half and primarily the fourth quarter. So look at that approach. Look at that area. What have you been doing poorly? And try. That's where I think you try something different.
We talked yesterday, about Philly struggling mightily offensively in the first quarter. That seems to me much more straightforward to address than what you're talking about with you have a team whose defense late in games, something is happening. That's what happened against the Chargers, what happened against the Raiders. Like, how do you, when it's not something, it's not a game plan thing, it's not, how do you address something like that? Because that seems to be, among the other issues, the primary issue for the Steelers as of late.
Well, sometimes it's not just a defensive issue. It can also be an offensive issue, and that means that you have to play complementary football. And you've got to put your defense, if you know that your defense is going to struggle, it's a function of trying to have more extended drives and trying to make sure that you're keeping them off the field as much as possible. And maybe it's a function of we've been heavy zone, you know, with a lead, we go to more zone. Stay aggressive if you have to stay aggressive. If that's your sweet spot, then try to do more of that.
What I'd be concerned about is in those critical situations, people say, well, what are we doing offensively? What are we doing defensively? It really boils down to, not game plan wise, it boils down to individuals making plays. If you go to the Patriots in their runs outside of Tom Brady, man, you can go through a list of 20 guys in a big game, just a guy will make a play. And that's what Pittsburgh, what we haven't seen from them. The Patriots, no matter who it might be a safety, get a tip pass, a linebacker, intercepts a ball, sacks the quarterback with a fumble. Pittsburgh and their players, they just have not made those plays. So we criticize Tomlin. We criticize how they do things. But in these games, in late quarters, you expect the players to be able to make plays. Those are the most critical. But because we don't know, we just want to say, oh, man, it's on the coaches. All the coaches aren't making adjustments. Pittsburgh's players have been put in position to make plays. They haven't made plays. Now, I believe they made a critical mistake in taking Oakland for granted. When Ben was knocked out of the game, I believe Ben could have been in the game. They were holding him out, hoping Josh Dobbs. So all these, bad situation there in Denver, losing the Chargers game. You can only give away so many games a season.
Right.
That's three games right there. That'd change the arc of any franchise, any team.
And it doesn't get any easier. The next week they've got New Orleans, so they've got to deal with New England, and then they've got to deal with New Orleans after it. And Dallas took that approach a few weeks ago of this is Super Bowl, that intensity. And you saw them come out with a different level of intensity than we had seen. And there may be an element of that urgency in Pittsburgh because it's starting to get to the point where it's going to be over.
I did say I'd like to see the players – it matched the intensity of Mike Tomlin on a Tuesday. Because, I mean, he was very emphatic in the press conference, but you don't win games in the press conference. Now, I heard Mike Tomlin. He's great in the press conference, but I need his team to play with a little more discipline and play with the type of focus that he seemed like he had yesterday.
Well, Ben Roethlisberger was a little emphatic when he was asked about why this team continues to struggle against the Patriots, and he said, I'm just tired of answering it for whatever reason. We're not quite there, and we're going to figure it out. But it's the same thing we talked about, that the Dolphins seem to have the Patriots' number. The Patriots seem to have the Steelers' number. Let's talk about these two teams and how they match up.
Well, I mean, to be fair, the Dolphins and the Patriots, that's only in Miami, and that is, to me, go ahead.
I mean, we kind of poo-pooed it the other day as well, and we said, well, it's because they're in the same division, and it's because maybe it's the Eaton, whatever it was, Miami still walked away with the win.
Yes, absolutely.
Which they've done.
In Miami, the Patriots have struggled. I look at the Steelers struggling against the Patriots as far more important because that's the team they've been trying to get through for the last decade. To get back to the damn Super Bowl. Like, yeah. The Patriots,
10 of the last Super Bowls, right? They've in the AFC, they've won 7 of them between the Pats and the Steelers. So they've dominated the AFC, and you can, man, if you removed if you remove New England,
Pittsburgh might have been they could be on the type of run, maybe not quite 8 Super Bowls in 17 years.
To me, where Pittsburgh is the same spot that the Colts were in with Peyton Manning. All right, when they played New England head-to-head, great quarterback, New England got the best of them. Pittsburgh in recent years, they cannot stop the New England Patriots. And from the defensive standpoint, since 2013, New England's averaging 35 points against Pittsburgh.
Well, and that's – go ahead.
And one of those things is New England doesn't have a lot of unforced errors. Very rarely do you see the play like we saw last week, yep, where Tom holds the ball, he takes a sack, they miss out on those points. They're going to make you beat them. And the frustrating part with Pittsburgh at times is in the San Diego game where they jump off sides on the first field goal.
That's missed.
That's missed, and then they block the next one, but they jump off sides. And then on the third one, which is made, they jump off sides again. Like, those types of plays, it's really hard to beat a team that's not going to beat themselves. They've got to be able to play this game clean, and they've got to give New England something different than what they've seen before. Because if it's the same formula, you just have no chance.
And I do think Pittsburgh's going to be able to score a lot of points this weekend. Like, not only because, even though they struggled last week, I do trust their offense more than I trust their defense, but the Pats' defense has not traveled this year. Aside from the Jets and the Bills game, and those are two teams that were, one team was starting a rookie quarterback, the other team is starting, I think, Derek Anderson in that football game against the Bills, whatever quarterback they were on that week. Jags put up 31. Lions put up 26. The Bears put up 31. Miami and Tennessee both put up 34. None of those teams have the offensive firepower, even a Steelers team without a consistent running game, that Pittsburgh has. I think Pittsburgh will be able to score 28, 31 points. But to your point, 31 points has been enough to lose to New England over the last 5 years by Pittsburgh. There's a reason the Patriots, I think, won 7 of 8 of this matchup. It's not because they're winning these games 13 to 10. It's because the Pittsburgh defense has not been able to solve Tom Brady. Even in years, the defense was their strength. They haven't been able to solve Tom Brady and the Patriot offense. And for all the reasons the Patriots lost last week, offense wasn't one of them. They scored 33. Brady had one of his best statistical games of the year. So the offense is clicking to a degree right now. Hey, I don't know that you can rely on Pittsburgh to be able to slow them down, even in Pittsburgh.
Well, here's what Pittsburgh can count on. They're going to double Antonio Brown. Okay, you can bank on that. And they're going to keep Ben Roethlisberger in the pocket. Okay, those two things are going to happen. So everybody else, know that Antonio Brown is
New England's going to run the ball.
Yeah, and there are certain things that are going to happen because they're not going to allow Antonio Brown to beat him, and they're not going to allow broken play. I've said it 1,000 times. I've heard it 1,000 times. Broken plays with Big Ben equal big plays. And so they're going to do everything they can to make sure that he stays in the pocket, holds the ball, and they can, you know, create sacks off that. So those two things, they're a given. Now, dealing with their offense, if you think that you're going to play in the first half or the second half the same thing you play in the first half, you got a real problem.
All right, Coach, stick around.
Coming up.
I just slayed with Jenna on the game.
What was the secret to the Cowboys turning their season around? That's next on First Things First. Cowboys are the hottest team in the NFL right now, riding a 5-game win streak, but just a few weeks ago, not hot. They were 3-5 with rumors swirling about firing their coach and making a quarterback change this offseason. Jerry Jones says this team is motivated by those early season struggles. Take a listen.
When you've had the downs or when you've had the type season we have, it's almost like in life, growing up without any money or growing up in lesser circumstances. Once you've tasted that feeling, it makes you appreciate and makes you not want to go back there. And this team, fortunately, has had real challenges early this year. We have lived to tell about it.
All right, Coach, how have the Cowboys grown since the struggles we saw them having earlier on in the season?
Well, there is some value in going through adversity early in the season and being able to come out of it on the other side. And it builds a trust. It builds a level of trust between the players. It builds a level of trust between the players and the coaches and the organization. And that can go a long way as you move throughout the course of the season. There's been certain areas where I think that you see it more than others. Like last game, the tight ends were targeted 11 times, and they were 11 for 11. And, and as much as they were talking about Jason Witten coming back and all those things, the idea of incorporating the tight ends back into the passing game, even if it's not explosive plays.
Yeah, I don't think Witten can come back, though, because – or he had to get a different helmet because he got a lot more hair on his head now than he had when he was playing. But go ahead, Coach.
I'm sure they could work out the helmet aspect. But the idea of incorporating the tight ends into the attack, I think, is a great thing. Joe Looney, the center. Joe was my bus mate in San Francisco, so we sat next to each other all the time. And like a great guy. He's This is the most games that he's started in the course of his career, and he's done a really outstanding job in a very difficult situation. And things like that take time. Transitions like that take time. Building Amari Cooper into the offense, understanding how he fits and how best to use him. Dak understanding that he doesn't need to press all the time, that sometimes it's just going to be a function of taking what's there. And it's a learning process, and they've seemed to take some real steps over the course of especially the last month.
Yeah, they have made some real steps, and Coach pointed out the trust factor. Not only did they trade their offensive line coach out, hiring Mark Colombo, former player, so this offseason they changed 7 coaches. Now they've changed the offensive line coach. So you're talking about 8 structural changes to the team. This offseason, their plan was to be more explosive. Their plan was to have the tight ends involved. But you go through training camp, you go through the preseason, and sometimes you don't get it right. They didn't have it right. They didn't believe they had the right personnel. That's why you go and make a trade for Amari Cooper. As Coach mentioned, though, you start to begin to trust when you have success. And Sanjay Lau, in talking to him last week, and Coach, thank you, gave me a heads up as far as what type of teacher he was and everything. Right now, he's trying to change their whole identity of a passing attack. He wants the tight ends to be more involved. So you can see they'll be incorporated more as we go through these last 3 games. And watch for Michael Gallup and Amari Cooper for their deep passing game, because they know Zeke's going to touch the ball. Last week, 40 times he touched the ball, but they want a vertical passing game with that running attack. So you can see late in that game where they throw the ball against Philadelphia, threw the ball down the football field. So they're trying to develop that passing game, that trust. That's got to be better. And in talking to him this week about what they – in looking at the film from last week's game, he told me they left about 75 to 100 yards of passing offense on the field. So they're looking forward to playing this week against a underrated Colts defense and seeing if they can grow that passing
game. A lot of that yardage was to Michael Gallup on a couple of 2 distinct overthrows where it looked like Gallup had won. One of them ran a double move, left his guy, and Dak just overshot him. But this team early in the year, aside from Zeke, was incredibly slow offensively. The only guy that added any type of speed threat was Tavon Austin, who made two big plays in the first 6 weeks of the season, and he's been out since then with a hamstring injury. He might actually be back this week. Michael Gallup, who's a 3rd-round pick, obviously early in the year, he's not totally familiar and comfortable with what they're doing. He now is more comfortable, and as you've talked about, they bring in Amari Cooper. So now we're looking at the Cowboys going into Week 15. Tavon Austin might be there as a bit player. Michael Gallup has established what his actual role is, and we know what Amari Cooper is. Now that's a team that might actually have go from bottom of the league speed to above average speed. You pair that with Zeke, who's in as good of a 4-game stretch, 5-game stretch of that he's ever had in his career during this winning streak, averaging 30 touches per game, 170 yards from scrimmage per game. You start to see an offense that can pair very well with what is, I believe, one of the unquestioned 5 best defenses in football. That's where they're checking every box as far as improving from where they were. Now, the passing game, I thought, was really questionable the first 3 quarters of the game against Philly, and I thought it was questionable in the game against New Orleans. But maybe they unlock something in that 4th quarter, because in the 4th quarter in overtime, the passing game was the best we'd seen since the playoff game against Green Bay 1.5 years ago. So every phase of the team right now is playing its best football.
And when you look at the early part of our discussions, it was always Zeke, Zeke, Zeke. And the fact that we can talk about somebody different, to me, that's a huge step, that there is a second threat to this, that they are making defenses defend the whole field, that they are taking advantage of some of the coverages that are being designed to stop Zeke, and that they can take advantage of those things. Mm-hmm. To me, that's a big part of this. And losing and winning, those things are learned, and sometimes they can be self-fulfilling prophecies. You can get into a rut where you almost feel like you're going to lose the game, and you can get into the other side where you think and believe that you're going to find a way to win the game, and Dallas seems to be much more on that edge.
I'm a little more skeptical than Nick is as far as what Dak is going to do, just because like we talked about, such a small sample size, quarter of football.
I don't know that.
Where you say they unlocked everything.
I said maybe they unlocked everything.
Maybe.
I want to be clear. I'm not confident that Dak all of a sudden is going to be the guy he was in the fourth quarter. I'm simply saying if you're the Cowboys, you have good. The most recent history you have in every phase of your game, coaching, offense, defense, running game, passing game, are all positive and all some of the best you have seen all year.
How do you feel about Dak Prescott from what you saw the whole game, not just in that fourth quarter? I mean, do you move into next week trusting him a little more?
Well, you're encouraged that he has shown that. And that's one of the things, and like I think that's what Nick is getting at,
yeah.
Is at least we've seen that potential in him where you really hadn't seen the explosiveness up until that point. Is it going to be a consistent thing to expect? I'm not sold on that.
Yeah, I think we should be careful in trying to evaluate Dak. Well, we said we couldn't evaluate him as a quarterback until he got an elite wide receiver. He's been playing 6 weeks with Amari Cooper. Amari Cooper, since that time, leads the NFL in yardage and in touchdown. Dak's got a hell of a lot better. These last three games, I believe that we'll see the continuance of what we saw in the fourth quarter. Just because you struggle a quarter or a half, we see Drew Brees struggle. We see all the quarterbacks. Ben Roethlisberger struggle. But now, because he's a young quarterback, if they struggle and then they get it together at the end, we put them under some different type of scrutiny. I believe, based on talking to them and what they're going to try to do, their passing game will be improved coming down the stretch.
And I've been highly critical of Dak, but where I want to be fair is what I know for a fact is this. If in the first three quarters of the game he was awesome, and then in the fourth quarter was terrible and they lost, we would be totally throw out the first three quarters and be killing him. So, like, typically with quarterbacks, how you do in the beginning of a football game gets disregarded if at the end of a football game you play at a level that makes your team win or makes your team lose. Like, that's what we've done. One of Brady's best games all year was that Packers game where he was wholly ineffective for three quarters, and then the fourth quarter was perfect. We gave him tremendous credit for that. So even though I've been critical of Dak, I want to be fair and be consistent with that evaluation.
And you're right. I do grade much higher or much more on a curve in the fourth quarter, because that's when you have the most information and it's the highest level of pressure. And that to me defines quarterbacks.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.